Well, moving through into the area which perhaps excited you most, the alternator hall, what was your impression of that?
Well, it's compared with some power stations that I've come across, it was amazingly clean and also silent. Also the smells of it. I remember as you walked in downstairs, there were 44-gallon drums of Valvoline oil, which was an extremely rare brand. In those days, no one ever heard of Valvoline oil, and I think it probably came all the way from Pennsylvania. It was a special turbine oil. That the smells on the there'd be no sulphurous coal smoke, but you'd get this whiff of hot steam and Valvoline oil that would, you know, pervade the place. Completely, the machines were completely vibrationless. They just sat there, and there was just a slight whistle came out of the turbines. No vibration, and very little noise. The most noisiest one, I think, was the BTH, because it exhausted up into the air the cooling air that went through the generator. But as far as the turbine itself, there was very little noise at all.
What about the Bellis and Morecambe? Did you see it working? Now, there had been two, and one of them got sent to South Australia. Were there two in your time, or only one by then?
There were two, because there was one up one end and one the other side of the Bellis and Morecambe, I remember.
No, that's what the two Bellis and Morecambe, so...
I'm getting the Brush Lundstrom's mixed up with the Bellis and Morecambe. That's right, there was only one.
Right.
Yeah, and there were two Brush Lundstrom's, yeah. One BTH.
And just focusing on the Bellis and Morecambe, did you see that operating very
much? No, I never did see it go, which is a pity.
It was not really in much use during your time.
No, never saw it run. Although it was all polished up and ready to go, I never did see it run. But it was quite a mighty-looking thing. It it had a handrail. There's pictures of Bill Brown in the... that Institution of Engineers book on Canberra's engineering
heritage.
Yes. Heritage, yeah. And all the cylinders which changed in size were all insulated, obviously, and then the sheeting around that was blued. Blued metal like you have on a gun barrel of, you know, a shotgun. Anything that had brass or copper on it was always polished up brightly. And the handrail, there was no beautifully made handrail that sort of, swept up, curved up, and then sort of terminated in big sort of bulbs that didn't, if you ran your finger over any part of that machinery, you'd never sort of nick your finger or get anything, any damage to your fingers.
It was quite ornate.
Oh, yes, very, very smooth to the touch.
Especially in contrast to, well, more ornate and perhaps decorative than the turbines.
Although the turbines had a sort of a certain shape about them, but they were half in the ground, like you didn't see the bottom of them, or half through the floor, whereas the... you saw all the flywheel, the shaft, and the couplings of the, I don't know whether you could see the big ends on the. I think you could see the big ends on the Bellis and Morecambe.
So if you'd seen the Bellis and Morecambe actually operating, you would have seen quite a few moving parts.
Yeah. Yes. There was. I think you could look in and see the crankshaft and the big ends of the thing. You definitely, the flywheel was there, and also the coupling, or a couple of bearings, the sort of outrigger bearings that went out to the exciter, and the exciter was sort of set out off that. You could also, you could look in and see all the commutator segments of the exciter, and all the brushes that would be working away in there.